Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on YouTube, channels A and N Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob is here.
Yeah, I'm back. Hey guys.
It's been a little while, like a couple weeks. We had sort of a rough month there, but we're back.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. I got super sick and then super busy.
Yeah, right. And we're still kind of working on preview guide. I'm putting together the manga guide. Mm-hmm. Sorry if I sound a little sick. I got some allergies. I'm dealing with allergies for like the first time in my life. Like we moved and now I have allergies.
It happens.
It sucks.
Mm-hmm. It's very allergies are actually less bad than they were where the previous place we were living. So
yeah, right.
You're, some of this stuff just, you know, is incomprehensible, I think.
Yeah, you're doing slightly better. I'm doing slightly worse.
Yeah.
but, it's been a hot minute, and we've watched a lot of anime.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other stuff, too. So, like, we should totally get into it. Quick programming note. First, I just want to say, like, sorry the show was off for a little while there. We had a lot of other things to get ready to go. But next week, I have a really good episode with Mike Sinner-Nicholas and Stephanie Shea. They dubbed Lou Over the Wall and Batman Ninja, which we're going to talk about here in a bit. I really enjoyed that show. I hope you enjoy it, too. That'll be out next week, I think Wednesday, which Lou Over the Wall opens in theaters next Friday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, check it out. Like, you have the opportunity to go to a movie theater and watch a Masaaki Iwasa film. So
yeah.
Why wouldn't you, right? So that'll be out next week. But we got a lot of shit to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to start with? Where do we start? Do we start with Frank's chat?
Let's start on a higher note. Let's start with Batman Ninja.
Frank's chat. We got to start with Batman? It was good. Okay.
Well, we should start on a positive note, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. All right. So first, we saw Batman Ninja, which is
absurd.
I did not
absurd.
Look, I had no look. I don't want to be like Mr. Negative, but I had no hope that that would be.
Well, yeah, like Batman and
first of all, Batman.
Outs,
second,
right?
Yeah. Second of all, CG anime like Fist of the like
right.
Not Fist of the North Star. Fist of the Blue Sky. Like, kind of CG, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But...
right.
This shit was dope. Like, I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was great. It was, like, the best Batman thing I'd seen in a very long time.
Right. This is taking us back to not 60s Batman all the way, because some of the villains and stuff like that obviously are informed by stuff that's been added since the 90s. But it's like, the current continuity stuff, but with the tone of 60s Batman.
Yeah.
And it is fantastic.
And
it's
so,
like, oh, this is what I wanted.
The guy who wrote this...
Kazuki Nakashima, and the guy who came up with all these concepts and stuff like that is
fucking Kill la Kill and Gurren Lagann.
Is the guy who came up with all the concept stuff for Gurren Lagann.
Watch
Kill
it.
La Kill. and for like the two people who like this, Oedo Rocket. Now he didn't write Oedo Rocket. If he had, it probably would have been better, but Oedo Rocket has a fantastic like aesthetic and concept. It does. It's really funny. And like this guy is like, I think, extremely conceptually gifted. And so he came up with all this crazy shit for this movie, and it is like chef's kiss. It's really, really fun to watch.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm. It's basically Kill la Kill Batman. Is Sengoku era Kill la Kill Batman? Is Sengoku Basara Batman? It's crazy.
Calling it Sengoku, like, sure, but, like, also, it doesn't go to places that, like, it is just crazy the entire time. It's
yes.
not, you will not be bored.
No.
And frankly, I thought the direction was, like, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was perfect. Like
yeah.
if you're gonna direct CG anime this way, here's how you do it. Look
right.
at this. Look
so
at this. Look at the fight scenes. Like the fight scenes in this are really good. They're
yeah.
really spectacular.
Yeah. So there's still cut rate animation. Like it's still they cut the frames and they're still
yeah,
like
sure,
really low
right.
poly. But it's all stylized. So every frame of this, basically everything is storyboarded to be really lighting heavy, really like stylized at all times. And there's breaks into traditional animation for bits and bobs that are supposed to be stylistically different for whatever reason. and it's really great. So it's directed by Junpei Mizusaki, who hasn't done a whole lot except for him and the studio, Kamikaze Douga, have just done bits and bobs for CG stuff, but most notably the openings for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah, right.
And this is exactly... So watching Batman Ninja is like watching those openings for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And as much as we've harped on like, cel-shaded CG doesn't look very good and stuff like that, you may remember that nobody ever really complained about those JoJo's openings. And it's like, well, could that work for a feature film, though? That's 90 seconds. It's a really good 90 seconds, and you're okay with the CG in those 90 seconds. Could that work for 90 minutes? And the answer is yes, it can.
Also, I feel like you could call this Batman JoJo.
Yeah, it is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Batman, for sure.
100,000% JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Batman, which I'm pretty fucking sick of Batman,
yes,
right? Like,
right.
I'm kind of over it. Like, as a child, I had two favorite superheroes. One was Batman, the other one was Thor.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
One of these characters is still my hero. The other one is not.
My favorites as a child were Spider-Man and Green Lantern, and things worked out for one of those as well.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe you'll get a good Green Lantern.
Right.
Well, they worked out eventually for Spider-Man.
But like to give you without spoiling anything, like to give you an idea of the tone of this movie, if you could just look up the art design and be like, "Oh, what is this like?" Like wacky feudal lord Joker, like he looks like Sengoku Basara Joker, but the role he plays is like a Yatterman villain. Him and Harley Quinn are Yatterman villains. They have a giant balloon.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's so good. But basically, it's just like Batman Ninja is just like, all right, the tone of 60s Batman, only with the aesthetic of like an anime, a Shonen Jump anime from the early 90s. So we're talking like dumb, weird Soul Hunter type over the top stuff, you know.
I really did get the JoJo's and Gurren Lagann and Kill la Kill vibe. That's what I got. That is what I chiefly
That's the easiest
got.
Comparison for sure.
Yeah, sure. And you're right, like the stuff you're talking about is definitely relevant, but like if that's what you want, you should totally watch this. Yeah. Like you really should. It's really fun. You'll have a
favorite
good time.
My favorite, this is just a little detail, but they have to be like, okay, Batman, you've tried. Okay. So like, this is what I was going to say. This isn't a spoiler. This is just like the basic plot, but the plot is Gorilla Grodd. So I'm going to stop you there.
Grodd.
It's not Joker. It's not Harley Quinn. Gorilla Grodd is the impetus antagonist. All of the Batman villains are in this, but he's the impetus antagonist. And he, travels back to the past to feudal Japan because he wants to take advantage of the Warring States period time so that he can take over Japan and turn it into a nation of monkeys and use the monkey nation once it is perfected to take over the world. That is his plan. Yeah. So that's the movie. That's what the kind of movie this is. And that if that's when you see what you want to see from Batman, like please watch it. So but like Batman at one point.
Like, I don't want to spoil it at all, because, like, what happens is so good.
Well, you can't. You cannot ruin how good this is, but,
You can, I feel.
If you described everything. But the only thing I'm going to describe is actually a very, very low-key thing. It's not a cool, amazing, awesome thing where, like, it's not one of the giant robot-related whatevers. It's just they disguise Batman as a monk because he's white and they don't want it to give away, like, what are you doing in this country? You're a foreigner. So they disguise him as a monk because Christian monks are at least somewhat common to see around this period. And he's otherwise normal, but he has a friar's bald spot, like just Batman in a monk's costume with a friar's bald spot, and on top of the friar's bald spot his hair is cut into the shape of the bat signal.
It's so good, I want you
to imagine this, and this is throwaway. This lasts like 4 minutes in a 90 minute movie that has it's so good. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, that shit is good.
So
yeah, watch that movie. Like
the penguin brings it, like this is a movie where the penguin has his penguins. The penguins are his sidekick, and they're dressed in little
Robin has fucking monkeys. Robin has
a monkey sidekick. And it's not just Robin. Like, we have also Nightwing. Like, again, it's sticking to the canon as it exists now. So we have Nightwing and Red Hood and Red Robin and regular Robin. But they all have sidekicks. And, like, the penguin has penguins, but they're wearing samurai gear. So you have penguins around. It's so good. Anyway.
Good. That shit is good. I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. I really wasn't expecting to like it. And, It was.
Oh, and the dub was really good, too.
Yeah, the dub was great.
Mm-hmm.
Our pals.
That's how we watched it.
Our pals, Mike and Stephanie, dubbed it. You know, they'll be on the show next week. Mike plays Robin. it's super good. Like, I loved it. I really had a great time.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting. I don't think that if you take Batman really seriously, that
you will enjoy
this
it.
Will mean any, that you'll probably be upset by it. But, mm-hmm. like, Whatever.
Yeah, look, if you're like, but the canon, then this isn't going to do anything for you. If you're somebody who doesn't care about the canon and you're just like, I miss comic book stuff being dumb and wacky and fun, like, this is just a little Elseworlds story that is just a joyful visual spectacle. If you like Gurren Lagann, JoJo, like, this is Kill la Kill X JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. You will really like it. X Batman.
Totes. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommended. My highest possible Zachamendation.
Yeah, right.
All right, so now we got to talk about Darling in the Franxx.
Okay. Well, at least we started out Jacob, nice and positive.
Jacob, I feel that I have to admit that you were correct about Darling in the Franxx.
All right. So, and now it's come to this.
Well, once I don't think
you
it's
darken
gonna,
my doorstep, Darling
I don't
the
think it's going to do anything interesting.
Yeah.
I don't.
No.
The latest episode was...
I expected them to be separated. I actually keep overestimating how creative Darling in the Franxx would be, because I expected them. It's true, because I expected them to be separate. So last we saw Hero and Zero Two, they were separated because of a misunderstanding. I expected them to be separated for at least one, maybe even two episodes. Not even a full episode.
Not even a full episode.
What, 15 minutes they were apart, and then they're like, get to the catharsis where they're like, oh, I'll never leave you again.
These two boring ass motherfuckers are separated for like 15 minutes, and then they fuck really hard, and they're like, yeah, heterosexuality.
Okay, no, they don't literally fuck. They just get in their robot together again.
They get in their robot, and it's like, yes, yes. Yeah, yes,
it's
like they're
orgasmic.
Making orgasmic noises.
They are.
They fuck.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that's what happens.
So
metaphorically, that is what's happening.
I feel like Darling in the Franxx is just like what happens when you get like a bunch of really incredibly talented visual artists and nobody in leadership who has a single creative idea.
Hey,
like,
yo,
original
that shit,
idea.
Like the visual shit is letting me down now too, because they're just repeating themselves.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to say that this is
not fun to look at anymore either. Like, there was good animation.
Yes,
there was really
well,
good animation.
Animated and directed and stuff like that, and it's, you know, the production isn't falling down, so it's all cast. It's very produced very well. I'm saying, like, nobody has, like, an original idea. It's not that they have, like, bad ideas. It's just, like, the most mediocre, like, what's the most uninteresting, basic, shruggo idea, and let's do that beautifully. That's Darling in the Franxx. It has I have not been surprised by a single thing it's done, which is extremely, like, I've watched crappy shows and I'm surprised by weird things that they do, or I watch good shows and I'm, like, let down but then surprised or whatever, or, like, even mediocre stuff that has something unique about it. Darling in the Franxx is, like, one of the least unique things I've ever watched, I think. It's just so ununique, uninteresting, unthoughtful. I'm shocked by it. Look, that's
I
me. You don't have to.
Sure, I don't. Right, yeah. Yo, we're allowed to disagree. I don't know that I think it's the least interesting. Like, I obviously am kind of a little taken with it. Like,
uh-huh.
I'm obviously, you know, interested in it and, like, want to know what it's ultimately going to say. It's just that, like, I don't have any faith anymore that it's going to say anything interesting beyond, like, you know, heterosexuality is important. Like, I don't know what it's going to say beyond
you
that.
You know, that's one of the reasons this is not interesting. It's like, framing the most basic and most, like, standard, like,
yeah,
family
standard,
values.
Like, literally the most basic relationship.
You know what's
possible?
Great? A mom and a dad that move on to have children. It's like, that's not rebellious. Framing that as rebellion instead of the status quo, which you can make a thing about, like, how great it is to fall in love and have children, but, like, when you frame it as, like, as though that's a daring idea, it just makes you even more boring, because that's not the case, right? So, yeah. It's just like, all right, this is really uncreative.
Yeah.
Again.
Like, y'all had a really good date. Why should I give a shit? I don't care. Neither of you are particularly interesting. Like, one of you is just a boring dude who needs a girl to make him, like, confident, and the other one is like
a girl who's secretly a monster and
is
therefore
just like kind of a fucking Big Lots version of Asuka Langley Soryu, so like, yeah, the Clarence Bin version of Asuka.
But Zach, don't you get it? She's secretly a monster,
so
a hot monster.
Like, Asuka was kind of like that. We're kind of doing that a little bit too.
Yeah, but this is literal.
This
instead
is
of
like
actively,
like,
taking any interesting, right, psychoanalytic.
So hear me out here. Like, I feel like if you have not seen Evangelion and you watch the show and you watch Eva, then you'll be like, oh my god, yeah. This is the real shit over here. Right. Like, over here is the real shit.
Like, Asuka's Asuka's
like Hiro's relationship with O2 is like the fucking basic bitch, like nonsense live journal version of the real relationship, which is over in Evangelion. Like, well, if you want to see that,
yeah,
it's over there.
I mean,
they're strangling each other. That's how it goes.
Well, I mean, well, so Asuka's thing, like Asuka's self hatred and like desire, like horrible insecurity, desire to be useful, to be validated, is like a thing that exists and people can relate to it.
Yeah.
What is 02's, what is that supposed to be a metaphor for?
I'm anything? A monster.
I'm literally a monster, but you're like a hot monster, and there's no, like, I guess you kill people, but it wasn't established why that would happen. It's just like all contrived. It's like, oh,
I really,
and then you suddenly, like, even the storybook she reads that's supposed to be foreshadowing what's going to happen later is like, and but because monsters and humans can't be together, she turns into one and is tempted to eat him. And is like, why? What is this a metaphor for? What does this have to do whatsoever with how relationships are formed? What does it mean? It means fucking nothing. It's so uncreative.
Yeah, again, it doesn't. I don't think it means anything. We got 10 episodes left. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
And this was done in Yurikuma Arashi, but the reason it was meaningful there, and they did the same thing with the storybook foreshadowing what's going to happen to the bear and the girl who fall in love or whatever, is that the bear was a metaphor for a real thing that affects real people in relationships. Like, it wasn't just, what if you were a monster? It's like, no, it's not just what if you were a bear, because that's useless to everybody. That doesn't mean anything. It's the bear is symbolic of...
Unless you're a fucking teenager and you're like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I know. But I don't.
I'm the bear. It's me. I'm the violent, understandable one.
Yeah, I'm secretly a monster. Why? I don't know. I'll turn into a monster and you won't love me anymore. And
it's like, me. Well, I'm the secret...
That doesn't have to do anything.
I'm a secret sexy monster.
Yeah, no. Anyway. Yeah.
Whatever.
It's and I'm not mentioning Yurikuma just as coincidence, like, because I haven't been on the podcast in a while, that they directly ripped imagery from they just took plot points from it and took shots. So I don't know why, because that wasn't a success, but I guess Ikuhara is extremely influential, so they're like, oh, I still like this idea.
There's a reason that most people who really love Evangelion also really love Utena.
Right, yeah. I mean, they were
they're kind of the same.
they were contemporaries. They are contemporaries.
They're pals.
They're literally one of the most memorable scenes in Evangelion is literally about the both of them hanging out in a hot spring together. Like, that was a thing that happened. So
yep. Yeah. But part of the reason why 3.33 is so good.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I have so many questions.
I was watching those 3.33 piano scenes again. They're so good.
Yeah, it's like, I have a lot of questions.
So
I have a lot of questions about your relationship to Ikuhara.
Evangelion 3.33, mm-hmm. It's a masterpiece.
Anyway.
All right, Darling in the Franxx. We'll keep talking it. We'll keep talking about it. We'll keep watching it. Mm-hmm. But I don't. Come on. That Ichigo stuff was stupid as hell. Like,
we're connected. Oh, I see you don't love me. I can let you go now. Bitch, did you not know that earlier? He's not interested.
What the
I had
fuck
to get into your head, like, literally.
What is
and
this
then I'm
high,
fine with it.
Like, what is this high school shit? Leave him alone. Let him just destroy himself with this fucking girl. Just
he's
let him.
Not
you
special.
Can't.
You deserve better. A and B. Why are you suddenly totally at peace with it when you can literally see inside his mind and see that he doesn't love you? It was very apparent, like what he was telling you. That anyway.
What is so special about this motherfucker again? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. He's supposed to be me, I guess.
And, but it isn't.
But I'm like, nope.
Do we want to talk about the Bitchigo controversy or not?
Well, look. First of all, don't fucking harass people on Twitter because you don't like the way your show is going. Ever do that. That sucks. That's the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It's not, but it is close.
And so beyond that, my follow up to that is, regardless, it's like, fucking don't harass people, creators on Twitter, for a story that's as stupid. Grow up. And plus, maybe you should examine why you're hating on Ichigo and not Hiro in this scenario.
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
What? Like,
well, Ichigo is being an asshole. Like, she was being a huge asshole about
but
it. But, like, whatever. They're kids.
Yes, exactly.
Fucking children.
They're kids. And plus, like, she is trying to protect him from somebody who literally was going to eat him. Like, I don't care if she has selfish motivations because she's in love with him. When you're in love with somebody, you do crazy shit. Like, it's understandable. You might not like it, but there's no reason to hate on the character. And the
you ever
reason...
been an asshole because you were in love with someone? That's everybody.
And the only...
Definitely me.
And the only reason that people are attacking her like this is because she's female. If this was a male character doing this, you would... would say he was protecting her.
Oh,
you
so
absolutely
strong.
Absolutely would.
Oh, so strong.
Yeah. You would absolutely say he's protecting her. He knows better. But no, because it's a girl protecting a guy from getting eaten, and she's doing it because she loves him, even though he doesn't love her back, she's a bitch.
The like, same people complaining about this, the same people complaining about it would make him their avatar if it were a dude.
Right. See, I'm the nice guy who's saving you from the big destructive guy who's going to
eat me.
You.
I'm saving you.
Yeah. Anyway.
Girls shouldn't stop me from doing what I want, though.
God.
Fucking shit. Anyway. Man, that Batman Ninja movie was really good.
It was. Well, aren't you glad we opened with that?
I keep thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's Darling in the Franxx. We'll keep going. Next up, let's talk about Megalobox, because I hadn't caught up on it until today. Mm-hmm. I finally caught up on it. I've been really, really busy with Spring Manga Guide, which is coming up, mm-hmm. and I'm very excited about it. I'm going to talk about it a little later.
And as of the time this is posted, we'll have Spring Simuldub Guide up.
Yeah, Simuldub Guide is coming up. Dubs. Soon too. Also, our the spring preview guide is now brought to you by Hulu.
Yes.
So check that out. Yeah, we'll have some dub impressions. But Megalobox has been hyped to shit. Like, I feel like I see a lot of hype for Megalobox.
Mm-hmm.
And I know like TMS has been putting out like press releases for it and stuff. Like, I've seen a lot of that sort of marketing language around it. And so that I think that kind of put me off it a little bit. Like, that much marketing on a show like that. Mm-hmm. But I eventually, you know, I was like, all right, I gotta watch this though. And I liked it a lot. I appreciate what it's trying to do. I wish the story weren't so fucking rote. I really wish it were not so rote.
Right.
It is still really rote. Mm-hmm. Episode 4 was really good. You were telling me, like, just get through episode 4. It'll you know, the quality will make itself apparent, right? Like, you will see it.
Right.
There.
I was like, episode 4 is the peak. I was like, this
and
is
right.
a really good part.
You're right. It was really good. That was very good and exciting. But it is the extremely standard boxing narrative.
Yes.
Like, very standard. Even though there's, like, cybernetic parts and everything.
The show's success is 90% aesthetic, I'm going to say, and 10% story.
And I can totally appreciate that. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, what is up with the resolution?
I love it. I love it.
Explain it.
Okay, so for those who don't know, Megalobox looks all blurry and weird because back in the early 2000s, we just moved into digital over Cell, which means that animation, especially for television, because we're trying to save money, was not shot on film anymore. It was done digitally in about, like, what, is 480 a stretch for the like 320 by 240?
240p.
240p. So this was basically animated in 240p and colored in the computer. And so that's why stuff from the early 2000s, it was meant to be seen on a CRT monitor. It's not a big deal, right? So in 4x3. And while Megalobox is 16x9, basically what they did to replicate that is it is animated like stuff is now in HD, digitally, but not in the days of DigiPaint where it was this really like flat, simple sort of process that was exported with, you know, at a very low resolution. Now it's done in HD and it looks nice, but they were like, we want to make it look like Fooly Cooly. And like the wasn't the revival of Ashita no Joe around that time, that one of the seven revivals it's been through?
It's been through several.
Yeah, I'm sure one of them was.
I think I know the one that you're talking about. You're not talking about Hajime no Ippo, are you?
There was a Hajime no Ippo at that time as well. But yeah. They are specifically, this is supposed to be like more inspired by Ashita no Joe. But like, yeah, there was definitely an Ippo revival around that time, just coincidentally. Anyway, my point is, they're trying to make it look like stuff from that era. So what do they do? Well, they make it in HD, and then they render it out in a much lower resolution and blow it back up, and that's why it looks like that. And the reason that they are doing that is because they want it to look like you dug it out of the fucking earth, and they would like two or three episodes on a disc from Genion. Well, not they're not thinking. I mean,
like, volume one is sitting in a box, an empty box that you're supposed to put volumes two and three in it.
And they want it to look like that. And I think that that is valid. I wouldn't want everything to look like that. However, and I wouldn't want it to look like that if it was supposed to be one of the highfalutin, like, fantasy, JRPG-based anime of the time. Like, that wouldn't work so good. But because its aesthetic is, like, dirty, grimy, ugly, like, sort of more like Wolf's Rain, I think, it kind of works. And I think I love it. Because I am nostalgic for that time. That was the time in which I was first buying anime, and I was buying them all on singles and stuff like that. And so I remember, like, that blurry, flat DigiPaint look. And so I'm charmed by it in Megalobox because I don't feel like I'm missing detail. I don't feel like it's obscuring detail that I want to see. I feel like that is the detail, like the messed up, like, bustedness of it, like the ripped up by the tape header look is part of the charm. So I dig it, but yeah.
I also like it. I think I got around to it. I think the episode 4 really kind of brought me around to it. I did not appreciate the low fidelity. I didn't.
I like it.
I don't still like... you and I were talking about this. Like, you're a bit younger than me.
Yes.
And I was just at work when DigiPain anime was a thing. I was just working with anime then.
Right.
And I don't miss the way that, like, soft-ass, low-def DVDs look. I don't miss it. I don't... Like, Wolf's Rain is a DigiPain show that, like, kind of looks okay on Blu-ray, but even then, right, it's like, God, just fucking remake this thing in widescreen. Please, just remake
it. Well, so I revisited...
You could do all this amazing art. The show would look so good if you just fucking remade it. Like, it was just made in low resolution, and it's not, like, pixel art. It's just, like, old PlayStation games or old N64.
Yeah.
It's not, like, Super Nintendo. It's, like, N64 or PlayStation.
You can see the scan lines on the side of the frame.
Yeah, and
I like that. Yeah. I don't want it to be... I like it because it's shitty. So that's why...
That's not the kind of shitty I want.
I know, but you grew up with different shitty, so
you're
for
totally
me...
You're totally right. You totally nailed it when you said this. You were like... Look, it's just not the shitty that you want, but it's the shitty that I... You totally know.
Well, here's the thing, and it's not the shitty that I want for a lot of things. I will say, objectively, I think that, like...
Well, the show looks fucking amazing. It does. It looks so good.
Well, okay, but I'm going to talk about, like... So, quality standards of animation and transitioning to digital, whatever. Like, transitioning to digital from Cell was an ugly adolescence, and objectively speaking, early DigiPaint stuff looks 100% worse than Cell animation. It does.
Yeah.
However... If your story is about a dirty, grimy, nasty, like, environment where it's supposed to be kind of fucked up and you half expect, like, there to be suddenly, like, a pfft and, like, a pause thing flashing while you're watching. Like,
suddenly the Serial Experiments Lane opening starts.
Yeah. And, well, and was Lane? And that was too, right? Yeah,
that was 100,000% digital.
Well, I'd forgotten because it was, like, 1999, but it was definitely digital. So, like...
Yeah, the Blu-rays for that are a little like,
Yeah, you tried. But, and so yeah, like, I don't like it for everything. I think Fruits Basket looks like shit. I think a lot of those early JRPG adaptations look like shit. But I find it really nostalgic for Fooly Cooly, for Lane, for Wolf's Rain, because all of those things had a sort of a grimy, like, buried aesthetic that you, like, you're kind of getting it out of the ground, you know, like it was tossed in a dumpster. And Megalobox, because it has the same thing, like this was tossed in a dumpster, then I think it's aged well. So it looks, I think it looks really cool. I wouldn't want everything to look like that, but I'm like, yep, I find this nostalgic.
I just, like, here's the thing. I see myself sitting in a hotel room at Anime Expo 2003, mm-hmm. and Genion is about 2 or 3 years out from total fucking bust, and they've got the art for this on a big poster board, and it's on an easel, and I'm sitting there, and I'm interviewing... who am I interviewing? It is a specific voice actor from the early 2000s, like one of those guys that would have been in a show like
Richard
this.
Epcar. I mean, he's still around, but...
No, it wouldn't have been Epcar. It would have been... like, Epcar would have been like, this guy's been around forever, but it would have been somebody who was, like, in the early 2000s, like, did a bunch of anime voice
acting. Did a bunch? Johnny Young Bosch.
And then maybe it would be, like, Liam O'Brien. Like, my friend. Right. He's my friend.
Yes.
Liam O'Brien. He hasn't really done a lot of anime since the, you know, the 2000s, but, like, he's done it, but not a lot of it. Uh-huh. But that's the kind of voice actor or Johnny Young Bosch, you know, like you said.
Yeah. He's still around, but, I mean, he was...
Like, you literally just interviewed Johnny.
I did a month or two ago. Yeah,
like he's still doing anime, but you know, that's kind of what I mean. Like, that is the aesthetic that show is going for, and it's just like, oh, I was at work then, so it's not like childhood memories. It's like, remember when things like were low def?
Yeah, were low def,
like as blurry as hell.
And I just realized I was like, it wasn't just that I rewatched Fooly Cooly for the premiere on Adult Swim. I also have begun rewatching Full Metal Panic, and now that one has not aged well. Visually, like that one, because the aesthetic wasn't supposed to be grimy and dirty, it has not aged well visually at all.
Well, you were talking about you were saying nice things about Fumofu, which is KyoAni, so of course it looks okay.
Well, I think it's like the first major. That was the first full series that KyoAni did.
Yeah, but it looks okay.
Yeah, and but Gonzo's Digimation 2002 Full Metal Panic does not look good.
If you told me that, like, did you know that this Gonzo animation hasn't aged well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I know that.
But however, so it looks like shit. However, I'm like, oh, right. Like, I haven't looked at this in so long, but this is how I entered. And, well, it's weird. I straddled both because I was purchasing things on singles new from the DigiPaint era, but I also watched tons of stuff that was animated on Cell that had been out for a while. So I was experiencing both at this. I entered anime experiencing both at the same time. So I know that it looks shittier, but I do have nostalgia for it. So, yeah, I wouldn't want if you're trying to revive 2000s stuff, I don't think it should. I'm glad that Fooly Cooly and Full Metal Panic's revivals don't try to look like a 2000s anime. That would be a mistake. Mm. But Megalobox, that makes sense. It makes sense to me that that would look that way because it's the kind of story that was like kind of only animated in that specific period of time.
If you're here's my message to the people producing Megalobox. Mm-hmm. If you're fucking serious, put out volume one in an empty box that's supposed to hold the other two volumes.
With a plushie in there.
Nope. With a Chase pencil board.
Oh, there you go.
That's only in the first, like, 2,000 copies.
Mm-hmm. You can sit it next to Infinite Rivius.
That's like the Fight Club, like, pour this lie on your hand thing. Like, show me that you're fucking serious. You know, that kind of thing? Like, if you're serious about this.
Yeah. No, I'm just mentally flashing back to like all of the empty Infinite Rivius boxes with the ferret in
them. Oh, yeah, man. Here's a very distinct memory. Anime Expo 2005. Jerry Chu comes over and hands me a big box of Infinite Rivius ferrets, and I'm at a big box of them. And I'm at the Anime Insider booth. Anime Insider was the magazine that Wizard Magazine owned a long time ago. I used to work there. And he's like, just throw them out. So I had to sit there and sling these ferrets into this audience of waiting people.
Oh, my God.
I have thrown probably hundreds of Infinite Rivius ferrets in my life.
Wow.
Story time is back there.
Well, my point is like people are now, well, people are getting nostalgic for lots of things because we had the Cardcaptor Sakura reboot, which is from more 90s, and like we're having a lot of reboots, but I honestly just didn't expect those reboots to be things from DigiPaint era. I'm expecting things that are older. So now I'm like kind of excited. I'm like, what else is going to come back? Remake Fruits Basket. I mean, I don't know what else is going to.
Why has that
Trigun?
Why have those not happened yet? Why is there not new Fruits Basket and Trigun?
I feel like it's gonna happen in my lifetime.
Sure. Okay.
But like, I don't know.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but, you know.
Of course. I mean, if it doesn't, that would be like, are you just leaving money on the table?
Well, here's the thing. But people are like, oh, Trigun was... So Fruits Basket was huge globally. But Trigun, a lot of people say, well, they tried that with the movie. Well, the movie was a weird hell thing.
What year was Badlands Rumble?
2000. Is that seven or something?
Okay. Officially too fucking old to count.
And well, besides that, that movie was in production hell. It was greenlit like right after the series.
2010.
I don't think
it counts anymore.
That wasn't them. Yeah, Badlands Rumble wasn't them thinking, let's do a revival. That was like, this was done when it was hot shit and it just took forever to finish. However, like I'm thinking a remake, and people say like, oh, well, unlike Fruits Basket, Trigun was only big in America. That's not true. Like, that is a Cowboy Bebop sort of misnomer. It did way better in America. However, when you talk about...
The manga did fine.
The manga did fine, and also, like, so you've had the Blood Blockade Battlefront thing. You've had, like, how many creators? Rie Matsumoto, Kinoko Nasu, and who wrote Ancient Magus Bride? Talk about how fucking influential Trigun was for them. They're like, oh, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, so even if it wasn't like a huge hit, if the people making anime right now are like, this was hugely influential for me, then I'm like, make it. I want to see the crazy stupid designs in that show. Make it, you know.
Yeah, anyway. Totally. Yeah, no, I would be down for like if they made Trigun and it looked like Megalobox, that would be fucking amazing.
That would be great.
Like, that's it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do that. Mm-hmm. Make Trigun, but make it look like Megalobox.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like, I don't know that I want that, because that... well, yeah,
I do want it in HD.
Trigun was animated on Cell.
No, but I, like, that Megalobox soft filter, I don't love it. I want
the Trigun reboot to be not animated on Cell, but like I want it to be shot like on film and have that grainy look. So it can't look like a 2000 anime because it's too old. But like, yeah, that's what I want.
What if they're like, look, we're just going to continue.
Yeah, maybe
Trigun in 4:3. with this like incredibly jank 90s animation.
That would be sad.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want that.
You'd be like, nah.
No, I just want it to have the same janky color palette and like the film grain. That's what I want. But I want it to be like, they have to be able to draw those incredible things that are in the manga. So incredibly ugly, amazing things.
One thing I will say about Megalobox, extremely hot main character.
Oh, yeah?
Very hot. Joe is good looking.
He's like if you took Spike Spiegel, darkened him up a little bit, rubbed some dirt into his hair, pushed him, made him a little shorter and then more muscular, like a little more stocky. And that's basically what Joe is.
Yeah, I'm into it. Mm-hmm. I like it. Like Spike is kind of like, meh. Like this dude, I'm in for it though.
Well, so the thing that I like, like I said, the story is pretty generic. It's all in the execution. It's all in the aesthetic because the story is like meh. It's very standard. It's not bad or anything. It's just extremely standard. But the one story detail I like that I thought was like really cool is like obviously. So this is a Ashton Ojo like tribute. It's not like it doesn't have any of those characters except for his background cameos and stuff like that. But like it is. Basically, he's just like known as Junk Dog, or like he has a number or whatever. He doesn't have a name, and they're like, "Well, we have to give you a name in order to register you in the official boxing tournament, so you're not just like fighting in illegal rings or whatever." And right before this, they showed him like driving past a giant billboard that says like, you know, Megalo City. It's like, you know, everywhere you want to be or whatever, and like only for the most elite, blah blah blah. It's not for average Joes, and that's why he picks the name Joe. He's like, "Call me Joe because I want to deliberately stick it to Megalo City." So. Like stuff like that, like I really like. So there are nice touches in the story. It's just they're so minor compared to sort of the more like standard bedrock of story you've seen 1,000 times that they don't stick out as much. But like, you know, I'm curious to see if they're really going to like blow up Megalo City or not. You know, like are they really going to fuck it up?
Yeah, I definitely will finish that one out. That one and Darling in the Franxx, I think, are. Kind of what I'm largely watching this season, actually. Like, not too much else really grabbed me. I've been watching My Hero Academia, but I'm kind of waiting for it to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's the fucking chunin exam. So
right, so that was the idea.
Here we
that.
Are. Here's the chunin exam. They're in a forest. And what? Villains show up? Yeah. We weren't expecting that. You're just training, kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally the chunin exam. Which is fine. I like the chunin exam. Like, the animation is still really nice, and I care about these characters, but, like, I know this is going places that it just isn't yet, and I don't know. Maybe I'll probably let episodes build up before really, you know. Well, I don't know that I can watch that show week to week. Mm-hmm. I really did like watching seasons 1 and 2 like in chunks. I preferred that. I think that's just how I prefer to watch Shonen Jump stuff. Mm-hmm. Like just big chunks, mm-hmm. big chunks. It's a good show to binge. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. See, I couldn't disagree. More, I was so impressed with just the setup episode of My Hero Academia. Like, I was like,
really? It was just a tune-in exam.
but it was so like they gave in past episodes, I feel like I didn't understand all the ensemble characters. All the characters have just had 1 or 2 lines, but this time I felt like they really like every cut that had like an ensemble character in it. Like, it was really kind of showing you their personality. They reiterated the powers a little bit, so you know.
No, it's very good.
It was just really good, and I was like, oh yeah, I missed this a lot. And then you didn't get to the most recent episode.
No, I did not. I only saw 39, 40, 41, I think.
Right. Well, I think as people were talking about it, it is the thing that I like, which is disgusting fights. And it's a guy who's, I'm not gonna spoil what happens, but a guy whose superpower is to like. He just bulks up. He gets really, really muscular, but his muscles bust through his skin. So his skin doesn't change. It's just he can make himself more muscular. So he's just fighting with his own muscles. He's basically like a giant Akira monster. And it is really good. Like, the animation is insane because it's just like you can't even tell who is Deku and who is this villain anymore because the muscles are just like pounding into his like flesh. And it's really crazy. Anyway, but like, so it was just really exceptional. I didn't, the story wise.
Wait, that's 42?
Yeah, that's the most recent one.
Shit, of course. All right, I didn't see the good one yet.
That's okay. That's okay. But honestly, story wise, there's not. It's not set up very much. It's sort of like a payoff without a setup. So it's really cool to watch. But I didn't feel much emotionally because there wasn't a whole lot of setup for it. It was just a good fight. But like, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad to have this back. And you know, it's gonna get crazier later.
Yeah. I don't know. I was expecting to have more feelings about My Hero Academia, and it's like, oh, okay, no, it is just Shonen Jump. Like, that's fine. You know, I really like this Shonen Jump, and this show still looks fucking amazing. Like, that show looks so good. Uh-huh. The direction and the animation, outstanding. Like, really looks good. It doesn't really feel like you're just watching another episode of a Shonen Jump show, you know? Uh-huh. It feels like you're watching an event, like uh-huh. you're watching a big thing. Uh-huh. It's very cinematic.
Right.
I like that. Okay, before we get to... So you watched anime that I didn't watch, but before I get to that, I do want to talk a little bit about Devilman, the manga, okay. which I have been reading. So yeah. we've got our big manga guide coming up in just a couple weeks, May 21st. Don't hold me to that. It might be the following Monday. We have so much material to get through. But I have been reading the OG Devilman, original Devilman, classic Devilman from 1972, Gonagai's original manga, and it's fucking amazing. Like, I've been thinking about Devilman Crybaby a lot, and I think it might be, uh-huh. Jacob, I think it might be one of the five best anime I've ever seen. I think I think it might be number four.
Oh, yeah.
I think it might be number four. I think it's Evangelion, uh-huh. Wolf's Rain, Space Adventure Cobra, Devilman Crybaby.
Really?
Number five... either Utena or Fate Zero Madoka Magica. Like, that's like a combo.
Something like that.
That's like a combo, mm-hmm. right? Like, those two go together. The Genrobuchi.
the Urobuchi.
The finest booch. The finest of booch.
Yeah, the booch box.
Yeah. But I really that shit just took my heart. And, like, the Devilman manga is... different, and I do like Crybaby more. Like, I like that version of it more, uh-huh. probably because I largely saw that one first. Uh-huh. But, like, I didn't engage with Devilman that much as a young fan. Uh-huh. Like, little Zach didn't engage that much with Devilman. But now it is just my shit. Uh-huh. I don't know. Maybe it's just like, oh, I'm older. Like, I just care about this a lot. Like, it's so good. Like, uh-huh. the manga is blowing my mind.
What makes it good in ways that aren't evident from Devilman Crybaby?
So it's super fucking raw the entire way through. The expressions are really good, and it's just like yelling, and like the plot is it zips right along. You get right into it. It's mm-hmm. very clear right away. Like, it feels primal. There is something foundational about it. It mm-hmm. feels like you digging up tablets of, like, here's what makes anime cool. Uh-huh. I found the secret thing that like, here's one of the things that, like, makes anime cool and good, huh. is this shit. And it's also, it's really hard-edged, it's really fucked up and weird and screwed up, like, just like Devilman Crybaby.
Right.
But I don't know, like, the shit's just really speaking to me. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. It's so exciting and good. And it is very much, like, it reminds me a lot of Evangelion, you know, like, that those, like, high stakes, big drama.
Well, Evangelion crazy, was partly inspired by it. Right?
Crazy, yeah, of course it was. Like, crazy bombast. Crazy, mm-hmm. over-the-top bombast. Like, satanically dark, like, yeah. fucked up and dark. Right. You know, that's, yeah, sure. But gleeful about it, mm-hmm. like enjoying it.
Yeah.
that's what I like about it.
Well, I tell you what.
And the
I mean,
art is just mwah, is yeah. chef kiss. It's fucking perfect the whole way through. Cool. Gonagai's art looks like nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it
looks like Gonagai's art.
Well, yeah, I want to see an art gallery. Like, blow this dude's art up to the wall. Like, make it the entire wall. Like, one illustration, the whole wall. It will look amazing. Project this shit. I want t-shirts. I want handbags. Everything. Yeah. Everything you can think of.
Like, well, I tell you what. Like, So Devilman Crybaby didn't necessarily inspire me to... it's just sort of like, is the better adaptation worse, and is the worse adaptation better in some ways? Because Devilman Crybaby didn't make me want to read Devilman necessarily, although I'll look at it now as your recommendation, because I just felt like I got what I wanted out of Devilman Crybaby, and I really liked it, and it's definitely going to be... I don't know where it would stand on an all-time, but I don't do all-time lists anymore because I like and watch too much anime. I have to do it by, like, genre or year or something because I can't.
You don't have a top five?
Of all time? No, it's really hard.
Well, it's not of all time. It's just my personal favorites. My five favorites.
That changes a lot.
Yeah, it changes a lot, but you still have a list. Like, it changes. It's not like this static thing where it's like... You know.
Let me put it this way. I don't feel like putting a whole lot of thought into it.
Sure. No, I totally get that. Yeah.
I prefer
that
to
makes
just,
sense. To me.
Yeah, I prefer to think about stuff by genre or year, or I don't really like to think about all time. And but anyway, so Devilman Crybaby, I don't know if it would be it's definitely in my top five of the year. I guess spoilers for December, but, like, I'm sure that nothing is going to beat it out, at least on the top five somewhere. But However, my point was, I watched two episodes of Cutie Honey Universe, and it's a bad show, but it really, really, really made me want to read Cutie Honey. I was like,
well, you're in luck, because Seven Seas is putting it out.
Yeah. Well, I was like, oh, wow, like this, I knew that Cutie Honey inspired, okay, so I saw Anno's terrible, look, I'm sorry, Hideaki Anno, but it's bad.
The live action one?
Yes.
Yeah, it fucking sucks.
But also one of the OVAs that he
Re Cutie Honey is good though.
Yeah, that one was okay, but I didn't watch. It's like three episodes, and I only saw one or something like that. But my point is, that stuff didn't really illustrate to me. I think that stuff is so different from Go Nagai's original vision, and Cutie Honey Universe is like exactly like the manga. Apparently, it's just it wasn't updated, and it's not very inspired or whatever. But it's giving you a lot of the same beats. And it was like, oh, this is really unique. Like, it is gleefully sexual, but it's not like fan service. It's like nobody's embarrassed. It's just like everyone's a lesbian, and there's a bunch of weird character types. That's Cutie Honey, is everybody's a lesbian except for like the couple guy characters who are just sort of these small squat, like it's like a child and an old man, and everybody else is like a woman. And it's just really, I don't know, it's just really weird and wild and crazy. And it's I understand that it inspired the magical girl genre, but it resembles, that's like saying that Devilman inspired Super Sentai, because it, I guess that's kind of true, but both of those things have absolutely nothing to do with like the rawness of the original thing. And I'm like, oh wow, I want to look at like Cutie Honey in its original context, because Universe is basically showing you that original context, and it's like, oh, this is dated now and you can't do it straight, you have to reinvent it like they did with Crybaby. But it makes me want to look at the original material in context instead of like an uninspired update of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. I definitely get what you're saying. I think I'm more interested in the manga, because like that first episode of Cutie Honey Universe, I was like, shrug, whatever.
Yeah, for sure,
like whatever. I'm not necessarily looking for like, oh, if it's not Devilman Crybaby, I'm not interested. That's not true, but I do want it to be better than that. Like, that was super pedestrian. Mm-hmm. And also not and tonally kind of a mess, and like, what the fuck, like, you know.
Yeah,
I'd rather just read that manga and wait around for
but looking at Hideaki Anno's and like the modern updates of it, I expected it to be more like she's really embarrassed when she changes clothes, and there would be more of like a conventional story, but it kind of isn't that. Like, She's embarrassed sometimes when it's funny for a joke, when it's supposed to be a joke, and the jokes are tacky and tasteless and dated, mind you, but it is a purpose. It's not just because they're trying to make her a sex object. It, outside of those jokes, the whole crazy sexy thing is like just a sort of its own aesthetic, and there's like, yeah, everybody's a lesbian is the best way to put it, I guess. It's really weird, and I'm like, oh, I really want to read this. It seems really weird and arty and bizarre, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like, and if my experience with this Devilman manga has taught me anything, it's that, like, yeah, go back and read the source. It's fucking great. Uh-huh. It's so good. You gotta see it. The first volume of this, you can get 650 pages of this Devilman manga from Seven Seas in a couple weeks. I think May 22nd they put it out. It's a big-ass hardcover. It's like $30.
We'll always...
You gotta get it.
And it will always have... and not just... We have those two versions, and then we'll always have the OVA. Yeah, my aesthetic is Ryo in the English dub saying as monotone as possible. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit. It's really good.
It's very good. Yeah. I don't know, man. I didn't really expect, like, eventually Devilman would become one of my favorite fucking things ever, but It has very quickly become that.
Huh.
I really love it.
Well, I will check out the manga then. And I'm sure Devilman Crybaby I will revisit when I have time. But I'm like, I just know. I'm just like, oh, this is one of the five best things this year.
I don't mean to continue. Like, so I'm also starting to watch Yamato 2199. So I think I'm just like, the 70s.
Old question.
Dump it into my face.
Yeah.
Dump the 70s into my face.
You're on your own, brother.
Yeah, right? It's going to get real dirty. Here. I'll get some soap.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of my list. I did play that God of War game, which I sort of wrote down as like, maybe I should talk about this, but very quickly handed it to a friend of mine. I was like, why don't you take this and tell me what you think of this, because come on.
It's just not what you're down
no,
for.
It is not what I'm after anymore. But so other anime that you saw, you're watching Golden Kamuy. I am not. How do you feel about Golden Kamuy?
It sure is a shame that they could not animate it, but that story is really good. And I think there's some division over... So I think the thing that everybody loves is the relationship, the friendship between Sugimoto and Asirpa, which is really good. Like, they start as just... I don't know. Like, they get it right in a way that, like, almost everything gets it wrong. He doesn't... They don't meet because she rescues him or he rescues her or anything. There's not a weird, like... romantic dynamic between them or anything. It's just like, hey, we're mutually outcasts from two cultures that are at war, but it doesn't equalize it. It acknowledges that the Ainu are on the outs in this scenario, that they are the persecuted ones, but it doesn't diminish them, it doesn't otherize them, it doesn't do the Avatar thing, it doesn't do the noble savage thing. It's just these are two cultures that are at war, and both of us feel isolated and rejected by those cultures, so we're going to band together and reclaim gold from my people that was stolen by your people, and we're going to take it for ourselves for our own reasons. And it's really good. And the humor is great, and they're not afraid to make the characters, like, really ugly for the sake of a gag, but they're really badass, and, you know, but, like, this, basically the story is great, and everybody, like, likes that part of it. The divisive thing, I think, is the villains. I am okay with it because it is like, this is like old Western pulp, like 25-cent novel stuff where it's not really, it's technically historical fiction, but the tone is like, the tone is a guy punches a bear in the face, you know? So
yeah, no, it's Rise, Son of Rome.
Yes. And so, I mean, like, that's a different, I mean, this is
no,
like,
but that's what it is. Like, it's look at this badass and here's some historical stuff that you know about. And
yeah, but the tone is more like Indiana Jones and like an old pulp novel than it is like the glory of, it's not glory anything. Sugimoto is frequently just sort of the butt of,
yeah,
the
sure. I mostly meant like this is the type of historical fiction.
Yeah, it's a, like, very specific tone. It's hard to describe, but like, yeah, I guess I thought like, oh, this is basically a Japanese Western. It taking place a little further in the future from the exact time period that our Westerns would be about, but it's the same sort of aesthetic, really. But I expected it to be more pretentious, I guess, or more like, the glory of this lost era and frontiersmen. But it's not that. It's more like, it's more Indiana Jones. It's more like pulp novel, weird, nasty, like rebels on the edge of civilization, which I dig. And so there's some division over the villains. We only met one so far, and apparently there are going to be some problematic ones in the future. But the one that we met right now, like, is divisive because he is like just an over-the-top, cartoonish, nasty bad guy. He is a soldier from the Russo-Japanese War who got his head blown off, and he now has a big metal, like a steel plate affixed to his head with the captain's cap over it, to keep it from his brains from falling out. That's the character. And so, you know, so some people are like, oh, this is too silly and it's taking me out of the historical fiction aspect. I like it because I'm like, oh, this is like old West pulp stuff, so I think it fits the aesthetic. But like, yeah, I like, basically the story of Golden Kamuy is fantastic and I just want to see more of it, but the animation is poop and I don't like it.
I've been told you should read the manga.
Yes, and I'm sure I should. I don't really have the time for that unless it's all on Crunchyroll right now. Like, I'm not gonna go out and buy it or anything, so I need to be able to read it legally, like on Crunchyroll or something like that, because I don't really have the time otherwise. But I'm enjoying the show because the story is just that good, but the animation's really not good. So,
well, you know, these things complement each other.
They do.
A good story makes up for a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really dig Asirpa. I dig her struggle. I dig the and Sugimoto's struggle. And you know, I like this found family thing of both of them just don't feel at home in their own civilizations without it saying these are equal, because no, the Ainu are got the shit end of the stick and at this point in history, and the story fully acknowledges that. And it's also the story is really, really invested in teaching you about Ainu culture, which is really good and I think responsible. So yeah, basically it does what a lot of American Westerns failed to do, and I'm sure a lot of Japanese films about this time period probably get wrong as well. Like, and in like really getting the indigenous portrayal of indigenous people right, which I, as far as I know, like I'm not an expert on this, but from what I understand, they definitely made an effort. And so, you know, I dig that about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm just going to read the manga maybe. Mm-hmm. But the,
makes sense.
The historical fiction aspect of it, that is the thing where personally it just makes me want to read the actual history.
Yeah, totally.
That's just how I am. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes me be like, I'm much do I know about the Ainu, really? Mm-hmm. I kind of want to go read a bunch of books about this. You know, like, that's what I want to read.
They were paler and fuzzier than Japanese people at the time, but that's all I know.
How do you feel about Lupin? You watching it?
Yes.
I am not, so how is it?
Well, so next week it's going to get weird.
Why?
Because, so... The first five episodes formed an arc that basically the first five episodes wrapped up and told the complete story. And that story was Lupin in the modern era. And it was good. It was like, how is Lupin going to deal with social media? Basically, there is a game created by Lupin goes after drug sellers using Bitcoin to distribute illegal substances online. And they get pissed at him and decide to start like a Lupin game where they're going to hunt him. They're going to set up a site online where everybody posts sightings and they try to get him assassinated. Whoever wins, you know, wins money. And it was really good. It was pretty act. They didn't fuck up with the social media stuff or how the internet works or how people react to it. Like, all that stuff was really spot on. But then it ended and they wrapped it up pretty neatly and like sent everybody else on their way. It was like, oh, this isn't an episodic thing. This was like five episodes telling one Lupin story. So part four, for those who didn't watch it, was all like episodic stuff and one-offs and one-parters that came around to an overarching story by the end. This is like just one complete story told in five episodes and then it's over. And then the next episode preview, the art style has completely changed. The art style has changed to 70s Lupin and he's in a pink jacket now.
Oh.
I was like, what? I'm surprised it wasn't in 4x3. Maybe it will be. I don't remember if I saw that or not. But it was a complete
art. Okay, I guess I'll watch it. Fine.
Yeah, it was a complete art style shift, and I'm like, huh? Like, so is this a flashback? Is this a whatever? But now it's a different Lupin. It's Pink Jacket Lupin, and the art style is different. And he sent off all the new characters that he meant in the first five episodes. They're not like in the story anymore. So, but like, so I'm interested to see what they're going to do with this. It seems very ambitious. I was a little soft.
All right, I guess I'll watch it. Like, I didn't know it was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I was soft on part five at first because artistically it wasn't quite as good as part four.
Right? I took some shit for saying that.
Yeah. No, well, I thought the animation was just as good. It's just the art style wasn't as good. And
that counts for a lot.
It does. But, like...
I care about the aesthetic.
But now that I know that they're changing the art style every four or five episodes, like, okay, I'm going to check it out.
All right, fuck. All right, I'll watch it. Shit. That sounds really good. I got to go watch that. All right. All right, before we get to these Twitter questions, Jacob, I think we should talk about a little film called Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, man, do we have to?
No, I guess we don't. I liked it.
It was okay.
I
like my feelings on Avengers Infinity War was like, it was fine. I really liked parts of it. I really disliked other parts of it.
I didn't think I was going to like it.
It was several episodes of a television show that I continue to watch because everyone on the planet is watching it.
The season finale of Marvel was fucking crazy. Like, it was very entertaining. And they did the full Thanos storyline. Like, not the real Thanos storyline. Like, not the comics one. But, like, they did a version of it. Mm-hmm. And I cared a lot. I was like... Yeah, I give a shit. Like, I really cared. It's just Game of Thrones, though. Like, it's not meaningful or anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's just like, oh, I enjoy these characters and these plot twists, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of recontextualized my appreciation of Marvel a little bit. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, I don't need these to be anything more than this, maybe. Like,
oh, see, I feel really hated strongly the other way. After seeing Black Panther, I feel very strongly.
Well, I really did not like Avengers or Age of Ultron or even Civil War. Like, I thought the crossover movies were always these bloated kind of whatever.
That was like, my take on it. It was like, you know, like for all the bones I had to pick with Infinity War, I liked it more than the previous three crossover movies by a country mile. And I know that that Civil War was technically Captain America 3, but come on, it's Avengers.
No, that one sticks it out in my mind as like another Avengers movie.
It does.
It's just
another
crossover thing. But like, this one, I felt like you get the payoff you're hoping for. Mm-hmm. Like, I laughed out loud at the end. We saw it together. I was like, like right when the movie ended,
and I was like, You can't see it, but I'm making, like, you know, the Charlie Brown squiggle mouth?
And yeah.
Like, imagine that with half-lidded eyes. So yeah. It's not disgust. It's just like,
I literally laughed out loud and kept laughing for a little while. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's so good.
And then they bring everybody back in the next one.
Well, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know.
A third act that's the length of a film.
Well, that you're right about. Like,
yes, it's a third act that's going to be 3 hours long.
The next movie will definitely be a third act that's 3 hours long.
Ah.
And we'll be baton passing, like a lot of baton passing. Yeah. And in every single comic book crossover event in history, most of the shocking choices that they make will be reversed and won't matter at all. It'll just be like some recasting. Like, that's largely, I think, what's going to happen. But I legitimately got a lot of entertainment out of Infinity War, and honestly, like, if I want, like, a big stupid ass bombastic crossover, like, oh my god, it's the Avenger, you know, like the big movie, this is what I want.
Right.
That's what you want, right? Like,
yeah.
Crazy shit happens.
That makes
sense. Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I
that's what I want. Like, Black Panther was a different thing. Like, that was a that was, like, and I feel like I can walk into something like Black Panther or Thor Ragnarok or even Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and have different expectations for what I might get out of that than what I would get out of Avengers Infinity Gauntlet, which will certainly be the next one, you know, which I think comes out next year. But, like, yeah, like, I can expect different things from these things. I don't know. It recontextualized a lot of Marvel for me. I know I've been down on it a lot in the past, but I feel like they're making good creative decisions.
You learn to stop worrying and love Marvel.
No.
Okay.
Love is a very strong word.
And enjoy Marvel.
Okay. So, as a kid, like I said, Batman and Thor. Those were my two guys, right? I loved them the most. One of these turned out to be sort of, here is an authoritarian, vigilante billionaire. That sucks. And the other one is the God of Thunder from Myth. And I'm cool with that. And all of Thor's stuff was really good in this movie, I thought. Like, I loved it all. I really liked a lot of it. And the more I've seen, like, I saw Thor Ragnarok a couple times and liked it a lot. Like, I was like, oh, this is super fun and good. All
right. Right.
I just liked it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, my feelings on it were basically, like, it was firmly, like, eh. It was firmly, like, meh in the middle for me, because it's, like, I liked it much more than any of the previous three crossovers for a reason. I was never bored. I was definitely bored at points in the first three, but I was not once bored in Infinity War, and that's positive. But I liked it much less than the past several, like, than Superman Homecoming, Thor 3, or Black Panther. And so my feeling on it is purely in the middle. And I didn't like, basically, I didn't like the dramatic stuff. I thought that stylistically it was really rote. It was just like, when we don't have a style, here's the Marvel House style. It's shot like a television show that went straight to Netflix. Like, you know, it's only much more expensive.
The show looks very
expensive.
This season finale looks better than any of the previous season finales.
Yes,
it, like, right. The Avengers, the original Avengers, is on TV all the time, and if you turn it on now, it looks like a cosplay.
Hilarious.
It looks like a YouTube cosplay video. Like, it really does. Like, Chris Hemsworth is standing there in this fucking Halloween store costume. Like, it doesn't. Yeah, like, this movie.
Well, Joss Whedon didn't know how to, like, film a movie to look more like a movie.
I don't know exactly why it looked like that, but this one, I thought it. You know, they visually, they have improved, I guess.
Well, they've improved. It's just, look, this is stuff. This is like deep dive film study stuff that I'm talking about. Film theory and film study stuff. This nitpick. So I don't really want to get super into it. But, like, my point was, I didn't feel like it really spoke to me emotionally like the best Marvel movies have done recently. However, I haven't had a Marvel movie, like, speak to me emotionally until this year, because it felt like they were allowing people to do different things tonally with the characters. They let, oh man, his name escapes me. Ryan Coogler, and who's the other guy, though?
Taika Waititi.
Okay, I was like, something Waititi. Okay. So Taika Waititi and Ryan Coogler have, like, different aesthetics and different tones and ideas that they want to bring to Marvel, and, like, that's nice and refreshing, because that doesn't happen most of this. It hasn't happened in the history of Marvel, like, when it was more like, now just do everything like Joss Whedon would fucking do it. And so I like that stuff, and that stuff infects Infinity War because those characters are there. And even like, so, oh yeah, Guardians 2, I liked that a lot too. I didn't like Guardians 1 very much, but I liked Guardians 2 a lot. And so all of those like improved tonal variances and like different ideas infect Infinity War and make it better than the past crossovers. However, it has the same problem as the past crossovers where the conflict seems like inflated but sort of emotionally bankrupt, and like the drama, I don't care for it. So basically, I liked the comedy and the flavors of other movies in this one. Like, I just wanted to, I wanted a movie with everybody just with Spider-Man meeting Doctor Strange and having funny conversations, and Thor having funny conversations with Drax. That's what I want.
That stuff was so good.
That stuff was good, but the rest of it, but all the Thanos stuff, all the drama, it was bad. I didn't like it. So
you know who sucks? Star-Lord. Like, I love the Guard. Like, I didn't love the Guardians of the Galaxy in the beginning. Now I kind of love them because Volume 2 was really good, and their stuff in this one was some of the
good.
Best shit.
I would
shit.
Say I loved it, but it was pretty good.
Loved Volume 2, and this stuff in this one was really good. Uh-huh. And I like those characters, and I feel like they're writing them better now.
Yeah.
And, like, Drax had all the good jokes. Yeah. All of them were good. Uh-huh. Like, every single thing he said was really good and funny.
Uh-huh.
And I like that they have Mantis now. Like, that's mm-hmm. a good character. I like that.
Yeah.
I just like it.
It's funny when James Gunn wasn't writing her, they didn't beat her up for no fucking reason.
Yeah, right, yeah.
In this movie.
Fucking God. But Star-Lord is garbage and, like, does terrible shit in this movie that I feel like has to be reconciled. Like, are they going to address what a fucking asshole he is in the next movie? Like, are they going to do that?
I wonder.
There's some shit in this movie where, like, I can't talk about it too much, I guess, because of spoilers. I don't know if spoilers are a thing, but, like, there's some stuff where it's like, what?
There's a lot of... Well, look,
why would you do it this way? Like, oh, it's
I'm
a comic
I'm not worried about
part.
Spoilers. I'm saying we'll be here all
free.
Day.
Also, stakes free.
Right, that's what I hated. I'm
there
like,
are
all right.
No emotionals. None.
And so I don't like...
Did you notice he has a glove that can literally do...
Anything
can
yeah.
change reality and turn back time as long as he wants.
Uh-huh.
There's no stakes.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, so I don't mind that when it's fun. There were very little stakes in Spider-Man Homecoming. That was a fun movie.
That was a good movie, though.
Right. When there's no stakes and it's just soap opera bullshit and they're like, it's dark. I don't care for it. Like, look,
but
if
this
you're
going to
be stakesless. It was. It was like, it's dark. And I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, but it's part
War.
One of two.
I don't care.
There's going to be another part.
Yes, that's more dark.
Obviously, the end of this movie
the first
is
hour.
Not the end of the story.
So the third act is
when you
heroes
get to
the
end.
Darkest. Let me finish. Like,
okay,
like all right. The third act is going to be like heroes at their lowest point. So that means it's going to be a 3-hour movie. We're going to have 1 hour of switching to all the surviving characters moping.
Okay, all right.
That's going to suck, man.
This
that's going to be so annoying.
This is where I think this was the thing you and I like fought about the most was
yeah.
like, "Oh, I'm saying like, well, hang on a second. Mm-hmm. Wait till you see the next one."
Anyway,
it's only part one of two, and you're basically like saying,
in the
"Fuck
last
you."
Act of this movie.
Well,
I
look,
know.
I empathize with your view. I'm saying I don't think you're totally wrong. I guess I'm just willing to hold out hope.
Right.
Remember how this turned out with Darling in the Franxx, though.
Spoilers for something that hasn't happened yet. Doctor Strange gave him the Time Stone because he did some dumb fucking time bomb shit to it that will enable them to win, and then Tony Stark and Captain America will be like, all right, we'll make up our differences, and then Captain America will die.
Cap's
and Tony Stark
yeah,
will
Cap's
retire.
Out. He's
and
done.
Tony Stark will retire. There you go. I just told you what fucking happens in
Tony
the movie
Stark's
that comes out
gonna
year.
There will be a new Iron Man, but Tony Stark will be in these movies until Robert Downey Jr. is dead.
Yeah, but he won't have to, like, do the acting
No, he's
going to
show up and be like, Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. He's going he's gonna be Spider-Man's, like...
Spider-Man. Like, yeah. That's what he'll do for 10 minutes, and people will clap and be excited, and he'll be there with Gwyneth Paltrow and Jon Favreau. And I'll be happy. I'll be like, I love these guys for the minute that they're on screen.
All right. Mark Markington over there.
Okay, all right, yeah. Mark Marketing.
Yeah. Mark Markington.
Let's take some Twitter questions. I went to see Infinity War again, which I was not like, yo, I definitely need to see the end of Evangelion again. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not like dying to see it, but there's this thing called 4DX. Now, I don't know how many people are familiar with this.
Right.
4DX is a theme park seat. It is a Star Tours theater that you watch a movie in. I thought it was more like D-Box, which is just sort of rumble. Like
it's rumble. A rumble pack in your chair.
Yeah, so like Thanos punches the Hulk and your seat goes brrrr. Uh-huh. 40X Thanos punches
the
Hulk.
I saw the GIF, and I...
Thanos punches the Hulk, and not only do I get water sprayed in my face, I get, like, rocked to the left and, like, thrown around.
The whole seat just shakes in, like, 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Shakes, and there's water and smoke.
Fucking crazy. Spider-Man shoots his web shooters, and you get, like, across the sides of your fucking face.
Yeah, air.
Your fucking face. There's a shot in that movie where Spider-Man shoots his web shooters out, and then, like, and then kind of, like, coasts along the rip, the, I think it's the fucking Hudson. He sticks his foot in the water and sprays water towards the screen. Uh-huh. Okay, so you get that whole thing, and the seat rocks back and around so that you're moving with the spray and then also getting sprayed. Uh-huh. I mean, come on, you're supposed to sit through a 3-hour fucking movie like this. And that movie is all just violence. That's the only thing that's happening in your seat, is just rocking back and forth endlessly. I peaced out after about an hour. I was like, I cannot take any more of this. I waited until Thor got on to the fucking, what is the name of the Guardians of the Galaxy ship? Why am I asking you
I
that?
I don't know.
Wait, it's on the tip of my tongue. They say it in the ride. They say it in the ride. It is the...
I don't know or
the
care.
The Minora?
I could not care
the
less.
The Minerva? What is it called? Someone's going
to
tell
move
me.
On to the next topic.
Okay, all right. I'm just saying, like, he shows up on that ship, and I was like, all right, this is the fun stuff. And then I took off. There was another fight scene after that. Immediately was all that Scarlet Witch and Vision shit, which is, like, impossible to care about. Mm-hmm. Impossible to care about Vision. I mean, come on. Is that guy shown up in anything? I mean, wasn't he in Civil War, like, a little bit? And then, like, he was in he was created in Age of Ultron. But, like, they spend a lot of time on that character in this movie. And you're like, why? How could I care about this? Mm-hmm. How? You're really tired of Infinity War talk, aren't you?
No, I just don't have a whole lot of that.
All right, I'll stop talking about it. All right, let's move on. Let's take some questions. all right, Twitter questions. Let's see here. Let me hang on. Okay. Schrodinger's Matt asks, how would you describe the core differences between a Japanese approach to superhero stories, e.g. Batman Ninja or My Hero Academia, versus an American approach? How would you attribute these differences to popular culture, industry, culture, or a little of both? It's a very good question.
So first of all, none of this stuff is monolithic, right? So there's a lot of diversity on both sides.
Yeah, there's no...
And second of all, we have an interesting article about that was written specifically about My Hero Academia from about a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
His thesis, so I, take this as you will, but his thesis was that specifically when it comes to Shonen Jump, so we're not talking about all comics everywhere made by, because there's indie comics and then there's movies and there's crossover projects like Batman Ninja, but specifically the major publisher of comics in America versus Japan, which would be Shonen Jump in Japan and DC or Marvel, the big two.
Well, if you look at sales, it's Viz. It's Shonen Jump here.
Right, yes. But we're talking about stuff produced by a country.
Sure, yeah.
And so if you're talking about, like, those specific things, DC and Marvel versus Shonen Jump, the big difference that the author of this piece, Nick, came to the conclusion was that it's mostly about sort of vigilantism and individualism, and those things... Like, even good guys coming into clash with one another. Like, we love stories where the good guys have to fight each other. We love the Civil War stories. There are a billion of them over here. And it's usually about, like, one brand and one book with one person's name on it over and over again. And, like, there's crossovers and stuff like that. But it's about individualism and branding. And in the case of Shonen Jump, it's about ensemble casts. It's about, like, how do all of these casts fulfill a specific role in a large organization, whether that's, like, the Ninja Clan or whether that's Hero Corps in My Hero Academia or it's the Soul Reapers in Bleach. Like, it's always about, like, a large ensemble cast that specifics that fulfills specific rules in a large, like, more bureaucratic organization to protect society or rebuild society or something like that. And so it's sort of a social / governmental structure difference between how America and Americans view themselves in their government and how Japan views those things. So I thought that was interesting, but, like, make of that what you will. That's just one difference in a specific, like, the most mainstream version of comics in both countries. So, make of that what you will.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good analysis. All right. Let's see here. Kaylin Evergreen asks, are you legally allowed to say why Neon Genesis Evangelion can't be licensed in the U.S.? So you're referring to the TV show? And no, I cannot, sadly. Zinky asks, now that the floodgates have opened, what other new roles would you like to see for Batman? Well, that I don't. I mean, they've made every, like, they will make every possible thing.
Yeah.
I would say, Warner Brothers, if you're listening, if you want to make an OVA, make a Batman Love Live thing.
God.
Come on. People would go fucking crazy.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
Can you imagine that? If Batman was in one idol group, and, oh, it's like Jem and the Misfits, right? So, like, you have Batman's like Jem, and the Gotham City criminals are like the Misfits. Uh-huh. And these are two idol groups that compete in Japan for gigs. Perfect. Make it. Make it.
All right. Yeah, I couldn't care less what they do with Batman. I just know that Batman Ninja gave me what I wanted, which was, like, the sillier, lighter. Basically, what DC...
I want to see Batman doing those Love Live, like, right into the camera, like his big eyes,
oh,
and, like,
God,
the yeah. jazz hands, like, next to his face.
Yeah.
I want to see him doing it, and Nightwing, you know, pushing their arms out and doing, hey, 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 you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, choreograph it exactly like that Love Life Sunshine video where they're on the water park playground. Exactly, or maybe the aquarium one, exactly like that. Do it. It'll be good.
Yeah, I think that I couldn't care less necessarily what they do with Batman specifically, but, like, just DC and Warner Brothers doing what they've what Marvel has embraced and people is more and is more seems to be more successful, which is variety of tones. And it took Marvel a long time to get there, mind you. They were mostly it was mostly Joss Whedon's specific, like, TV show snarky snark disaffected, but, like, propulsive tone, but they've changed it up a lot and changed up the stakes and the tones and stuff like that of recent stuff. DC and Warner Brothers should do that for their properties more instead of it just being grimdark and edgy, and that's the only thing, because, yeah, Batman Ninja wasn't grimdark and edgy, it was goofy and fun, and it's like, hey, let's some of do that with some of your characters. So, you know.
Love Life. That's the answer.
Love Life, yeah, that would certainly be different.
It would be super good. Get this guy to do it, too. Get the Batman Ninja people to make that. It would be really good.
Well, that would be...
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, but I don't think that guy is going to make a Love Live
that is
pure and cute.
Of course you're right.
You know, he's going to write something pretty gnarly.
Overdouble wants to know, have you watched either the new or the old Legend of the Galactic Heroes? I've seen the old one, at least 20 episodes of it or so. I have watched 2 episodes of the new one, and... I asked someone to spoil Legend of the Galactic Heroes for me because I needed to know where the political allegory was going. Like, tell me if this is authoritarian or not. It turns out, you know, it's, from what I understand, it's largely not. So I guess I'll keep going with it. I like it. I'm curious about it, but I got thoughts. Uh-huh. What about you, Jacob?
I haven't seen the original OVAs. I considered checking them out, but certainly didn't have time. I watched 2 episodes of the new series and then went, nope, it's too fucking boring. I can't imagine watching another fucking second of this fucking show.
All right, okay.
It's so, sorry. It wasn't, like, terrible. It wasn't anything wrong with it. I was just, I could not care. It was really dull.
Yeah.
Also, the opening, my favorite thing about it, the opening theme is just Hiroyuki Sawano's version of Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing's gonna stop us now. Like, I laughed my ass off when I was like, it's the same song. He just edits. Did he just look up Starship and he was like, you know what?
Legend of the Galactic Heroes, and it's the legend of the.
That's pretty much.
Yeah, you're right. Here's a question. I'm gonna keep watching Legend of the Galactic Heroes, but that's gonna be a commitment. It's gonna be like, all right, I'm gonna sit down and just get through this. I might read the books. I could probably get through those faster.
Probably. They are in English, so.
Cyber Prior asks, recently started a return to personal fitness. Congratulations. And sometimes I think of Midoriya on the beach from My Hero Academia or the cave scene from Yu Yu Hakusho and get a twinge of motivation to break through walls. He means...
not literal walls.
Metaphorical.
Yes.
I mean, if you are literally breaking through walls, first of all, tell me what gym you're going to.
Well, get a
job.
So
I can come there and break through them with you, because that sounds fucking great.
You can get it. You can get
every gym should have a Kool-Aid Man wall.
You can get a job in construction, right? And so when you're demolishing old structures, you'd be like, I want to do the Kool-Aid Man on this.
No, I'm just like, what a great idea. You need a gym that has a big brick wall in it that's combustible.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can just, like, after you finish your workout, you can bust through it. Mm-hmm. Be like, oh yeah,
yeah. Well, there's lots of footage of construction workers doing that on houses that are condemned.
Well, I don't care if other people have done it before. I'm saying it would be personally satisfying for me. That
they're
would be
satisfying
really
to watch.
Like if I ran a gym, I would have a Kool-Aid Man wall,
right?
And it'd be like, look, you can, you know what you can do when you're done with your workout.
Okay.
Anyway, Shonen anime is full of protagonists who overcome their limitations through hard work and willpower. Has a memory of a connection to a shonen show ever helped you get your workout juice going? Have you ever heard of this happening to anyone else? Yes, 1,000,000%. All Might fighting that motherfucker at the end of season one. I think about that when I'm on the elliptical or when I'm lifting weights sometimes. I think about All Might and his that animation, like just that like it is good. Uh-huh. Like that shonen anime really captures that like primal burning scream that you feel in your fucking gut when you're just pushing it.
Some would say Dragon Ball Z is
Dragon Ball is perfect.
This.
Dragon Ball is perfect. And it's that's like why it's like, look, I go to the gym, I see a dozen Dragon Ball shirts. You
oh,
will always
sure.
see it there.
That
you always
does
see
not
there.
Surprise me even a little.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, but yes, of course I've pulled in. Like, My Hero Academia is like the shonen that I have like related to the most, like, or enjoyed the most in the last couple of years. Like, I liked One Piece. I enjoyed Naruto. Like, I was talking earlier about the Chunin exam. Like, I did love the first, like, 100-and-some episodes of Naruto. Like, they were great. And I've seen probably, like, 100-and-some, 150 episodes of One Piece. And, like, the, you know, I love it, but, like, My Hero Academia really gave me the burnings. It gave me that, like, you know, that feeling, that fire in the pit of your fucking gut. And, yes, I totally know what you're talking about. Don't be ashamed to draw from that. And push and be like, kill it. And, like, take inspiration from that stuff. Because, honestly, like, American stuff that's about athleticism and, like, it's not really like that. It's this kind of aloof sort of physical perfection, like, yeah. Boring.
Adonis.
Yeah, garbage. Like, no, I want the, like, raw down in the fucking mud and dirt, screaming and crying and pushing yourself. Like, give me that. That's what you get from Shonen. Right. So, like... It helps you in the gym. It really does, I think. Let's see. Ink Drop Lily wants to know, what show series would you like to see getting a Megalobox-style spinoff?
You mean, so you mean, like, kind of sort of in the universe of or in the style of, but otherwise has no connection to?
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
I mean, so, I feel like because that's so separate, it's hard for me to think of something specific because, you know, because I guess you just have to think in terms of universes, right? And not in characters. You have to think in terms of universes and aesthetics and what you want to see more of a universe and aesthetic of, but not the story and characters, with a different story and character. So that's, you kind of have to think about it for a while. I don't know. I like fantasy type stuff. I like stuff that's like sort of wild and
they're kind of
open worldy.
All right. Jacob, you tell me if I'm totally off base here.
Mm-hmm.
Fooly Cooly Progressive. No, Fooly Cooly Alternative.
Okay.
The third one.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode we saw of that.
Well, that takes place in the same universe with the same character.
But it reminded me of Megalobox. Like, in terms of like, oh, mm-hmm. All right, well, you're taking this and doing something...
Different with it.
Right? You know, yeah. Different, right? Like, it's...
Yeah, well,
like,
you
Fooly
know,
Cooly Alternative seemed like...
It is technically the inverse of what Megalobox is doing, because it keeps the story and characters, but changes the aesthetic and, like... tone.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite.
So, yeah, I see
what
you're saying. I see what you're saying.
And so, yeah, it's hard for me. I'd have to think about it for a while. Like, that's a really thoughtful, interesting question, and I would have to, like, consider it. I'm thinking about, like, universes in stuff, and but I'd have to discard the cast. Like, that's kind of hard to think
I about. Want a version of Lum that is where Lum is the perspective character, not Ataru.
Oh, so, or it's like, so before she goes to Earth? Like
No, just from her perspective. Like, don't Like, I don't make me try to empathize with Ataru. Like, show me this from Lum's perspective.
Okay, but what I'm saying, like, so what would the story be? She's like,
she has this dickhead boyfriend, right? How does she deal with it? Her boyfriend sucks. How does she deal with it?
Right.
Why is she into him? We don't really understand it that much. Why? So, you know.
I just realized, that's a really good idea. I haven't seen enough of Yuritsai Yatsura to be able to imagine what she would be, her day would be like, what the story would be like there.
No, you change shit around to make it interesting, but like, mm-hmm. I just think that would be, like, I want it from Lum's perspective. Like, she's the character everyone cares about. Mm-hmm. Let's get into her internal life. Why would she be with this fucking asshole, this stupid ass wipe, you know? Like,
for sure.
Like Fujiko Mine, Lum.
Right, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, right? that's like a different answer.
That would be fucking great.
Yeah, that's a different answer than what the question is posing, but that would be an interesting
show. Just throwing stuff out.
No,
you know?
There's no rules on this. Yeah, it's your podcast. Like, you know, just like, that's a really interesting idea. It's really cool. I had an answer for the universe thing, and then it left my brain. It fluttered away. I mean, so that's kind of what they do with it. Oh, now I remember what it was, because it was really dumb. I remember what it is. It's really stupid. I want to see a story that takes place in one of the many other games that exist in the universe of Sword Art Online that is, like, with interesting characters. Like, so I've been watching...
Oh, like the failed game in Sword... Like the one that's not as popular?
Like weird... Yeah, like weird VR games. Or even just, like... I was inspired kind of by watching Gun Gale Online and going, like, this is better written than Sword Art Online. Like, oh, because this is giving me... So Gun Gale Online, like, if you like... One of the reasons the Sword Art Online is both so popular and so, like, me by nerds sometimes is because Sword Art Online really doesn't care about the mechanics of how the game would work, which would be great if the characters were complex, but, you know, as people, you know, likable maybe, yes, but not complex, Sword Art Online. So it's very accessible to everybody, but if you're really nerdy and you want it to be a little nerdier, it's not like that. Log Horizon is like that, and, like, that's why I like it. But I realized watching Gun Gale Online, watching the one that Keiichi Sixawa wrote, it's like, oh, he really explains how the game works and whether or not you would be better at it if you had any gun training in real life. And, you know, the answer is kind of, but no. And, like, he really goes into that and he explains basically how to win a PUBG match in VR. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I like it. So I want to see more of that for the Sword Art Online universe, more like people, different kind of VR. Like, I want to see that for the fairy game they play, you know, instead of it being the big, dumb, like, go save Asuna plot, I want somebody else's adventures in the fairy game. I kind of just want more Log Horizon or whatever. So I guess that's it. Like, types of VR games that are like, that are like that, but like, talk about the game mechanics and talk about like the survival aspect of that, or just an interesting story and characters. So yeah, I guess I'm down for more of that stuff. I'm down for more.
Jacob says, give me more Sword Art Online spinoffs.
But not by the writer of Sword Art Online is what I'm saying.
Like, don't dunk on Rekikar.
Oh, I'm not dunking on him. I'm saying I want to see...
Leave that guy alone.
He's fine. I'm just saying... I'm not saying he shouldn't make more. I'm saying I want to see other people's takes where they talk about how the game works and they construct, like, a different, like, smaller scale story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel kind of bad for Rekikar. Like, his shit is not that bad. Like,
no, it isn't.
So
I don't
much
hate
worse.
It.
Yeah, it's but people really are basic. So mean. People are so mean to him. Like,
well, it's extremely popular. It's extremely
yeah, no, I understand.
Popular.
I understand that. You know? Like, if I say, like, oh, I really enjoyed Avengers Infinity War, it's so popular, I have people who are like, ugh, rolling their eyes at
so
me.
So, it's basically, like, Ready Player One. Like, how many people fucking read that? And people bag on it, but, like, that's because it was enormous, so, you know.
Yeah.
Sword Art Online is better than Ready Player One. Right? Congratulations, Rekikar.
It is. It's a lot
You wrote
better.
Something that's much better than what Ernest Cline wrote.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, in hindsight... Ready Player One is not Ready Player One. Sword Art Online is benign.
Totally,
it is benign.
Totally, but you've got it's got such a wide. Well, I like Attack on Titan. That was another thing. Everybody just got really, really mad about that one too, and it's because absolutely it was inescapable in terms of anime stuff. Right, you couldn't get away from it. Same thing with Death Note. Same with that's just kind of good.
Lou Adere asks, this is one of our contributors from This Week in Anime.
Yeah, Michelle.
Michelle, seeing as Batman Ninja's Japanese title is Ninja Batman,
right,
and the English title is Batman Ninja, does this mean that Batman is his title, Ninja is his surname, or both?
Okay, let's think about this for a minute. So she's referring to is like, right, so if it's Batman Ninja, then it could be his, okay, I'm trying to process this. So either Batman as a title, like Hakase or whatever, like the, which means doctor, or Ninja is his last name, which would explain why they're reversed in English and Japanese. I'm going to say Ninja is his last name because he went back into the past, right? And so he has to like get a new identity. And he can't give his full, like, he can't give his full identity of these from the past, so he has to adopt a new name. So I'm going to say that Ninja is his last name, because that tickles me more than the idea that Batman is a title. Because it technically is, but, So that's my answer to that question.
Like, his name would be, like, John Batman?
No, his name would be Batman Ninja. They're like, what's your name?
And Batman. Ninja is his last name.
Yes. I like that idea.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. I have no idea.
It's a grammar. It's basically a grammar riddle. So yeah,
it's weird that they wouldn't be the same.
Yeah,
but then again, like the script is not the same either. Like the we watched the dub, and it's different from the Japanese version.
They base the dub basically on like what's happening visually and like the general plot outline, and so that they're not going to be radically different because it has to match the visuals, but all their little dialogue and idiosyncrasies are very different.
It's not quite Samurai Pizza Cats, but
yeah, but it's in that vein. I think it was in that vein.
I don't think it's that in that vein. If it were in that vein, it would be a gag dub. It's not. It's not a gag dub.
But they purposefully, I think, wanted it to be. And I think that that's why maybe it's reversed. They're like, well, you know, Batman Ninja, Ninja Batman.
Yeah. I sure did like that. I really did not expect to like it. Mm-hmm. And I liked it a lot.
It was fun. I will always remember that Feudal Lord Joker. It's pretty good.
I'm going to remember a lot of stuff from that. Monkey-chi? Was that his name?
Monkey-chi.
Monkey-chi. Monkey-chi.
Yeah.
And then he, like, summons all the monkeys. And then there's a huge monkey. It's really good.
Anyway. There's a huge monkey made of monkeys. There's a huge
Batman. And the huge monkey is not Gorilla Grodd. So there's several big monkeys.
Yeah. Well, Gorilla Grodd is
how could you go wrong? Like
that's made out of the other giant robots.
All right. Hey, hang on now. Don't spoil it. All right. It's so good. It's so
Batman
good.
Made of bats.
Okay. Let's see here. Firkwin Root asks, please discuss the recent passing of Isao Takahata. I am in the middle of a giant feature that's going to last like a week that is going to cover virtually his entire filmography. That is my planned tribute to the man. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss him terribly. I'm very sad that he is gone.
Right.
I don't think that he was going to make another movie. Mm-hmm. I think he made his last film.
Yeah, he finished Kaguya, and it's good that
he was in his 80s.
Yeah.
But there will never be another one like him. Mm-hmm. Never. There will never be another artistic voice just like that, mm-hmm. ever. And his stuff is magic. It's really magic. He had an incredibly sophisticated, incredibly well-articulated, bold, and arresting artistic vision that just... Like, if you sit down and watch Grave of the Fireflies, or even his movies that I don't really like that much, like Pompoko... It's undeniable. He like generated an atmosphere all on his own. Like,
right.
Yeah. A singular artist, mm-hmm. one that we probably won't see anything like that again. Mm-hmm. And I please look forward to my gigantic week-long feature about Isao Takahata. Mm-hmm. All right. Last question from Final Fury K. So, Magical Girl Ore is the surprise of the season, right?
All right. No, but
Do you like it? You're watching it?
I kind of like it. It's really weird. So there's very little source material, which means they went anime original for the most recent episode, and they did a weird thing where it is a Shin Godzilla. Okay. The plot is that they're making an animated version. In the story, they're making an animated version of another character's... they're turning another character's story into an anime, and they accidentally make it too much like Mr. Osamatsu, so the executives send it back and say, redo it. And so an animation runner takes all this stuff to have it redone, but he gets distracted playing Pokemon Go, falls into the ocean, and because of a radioactive accident, he turns into a giant animation runner version of Shin Godzilla, and they have to remake the anime, and it's basically just a bunch of ribbing on how Studio Pierrot does stuff, and like it's one of those anime talking about animation stuff. And it was just a complete diversion from everything else that Magical Girl Ore had been up to that point. And then at the end, the Magical Girls as boys show up and stop the monster. But like up to that point, it was just another anime comments on animation thing. And I mean, it was rocky and it was weird. It was obviously anime original, but I dug it. Like basically, that show is really irreverent and dumb and strange. And so I like it. So it's kind of shitty, but like it's really interestingly shitty. So I dig Magical Girl Ore. It's dumpy, but I think it's fun.
Yeah, I think I might check it out. It sounds fun.
If you liked Anime Guitar Ace, it's like that. Which also, Anime Guitar Ace was also like a weird dumpy failure that like turned into a anime about anime where like there's a really good gag in Anime Guitar Ace near the end where they're like, what is happening to the plot of this show? And they're like, who's writing this? And then they start playing the opening theme again, and you're like, wait, why are they doing this? Because they already played it. And they're playing the opening theme again, and in the middle, they stop on the credit of the writer, and they're like, nope, that's the same guy who wrote the first three episodes, so I don't know why it's different now.
Oh my God.
That's a great gag, right? So, you know.
That is so indulgent.
That's really good,
though. That is, like, the most indulgent.
It's funny.
It's funny, though. That's good.
No, I like it.
I like it. It's just, like, that's wildly fucking indulgent. Yes. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it doesn't mean, it's like, oh, I think this is brilliant. It's just,
like,
it
that's
makes me
too
happy.
Much. That's too much for, like, a Dan Harmon show. That's too much for a Dan
yeah.
Harmon.
Well, I mean, you know, the too much version of a Dan Harmon show is definitely what Anime Guitar Race was. And so Magical Girl Ore is in that vein. So if you want to see something like that, it's not like, oh, this is a great show that everyone should watch. It's just like, if you want to see something kind of weird where they're just fucking around and writing like weird meta comedy because they can, that's Magical Girl Ore.
So. All right. Okay, let's wrap it up here. I got an episode next week. It's already taped. It's already in the can. Just, you know, waiting on approvals and stuff. You'll hear that next week. That's me and Mike Sinner-Nicholas and Stephanie Shea. And we're talking about Lou Over the Wall and, you know, NYAV Post and all that stuff. It's a really good episode. Look forward to it. Thanks for hanging out, Jacob.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good times. Good anime. Like, good shit.
No, this is the season. We didn't even talk about Steins Gate Zero. We'll get to that next time, I'm sure. There's all sorts of stuff we could talk about.
Totally. We'll get to it. All right. Okay, we'll see y'all next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Music, Google Play, all that stuff. Leave us comments and reviews and all that. It really helps us out and appreciate it when you do that. Thanks for listening. See you.